So, good evening. Tonight I want to talk to you about gratitude because I think it's a really nourishing pathway for waking up. So a new person comes to town and asks, what kind of people live here? And the greeter says, well, what kinds of people live in the town where you came from? And the new person says, oh, they were dishonest and rude and lazy. And so the greeter says, well, I think you'll find the same kind of people live here. And the next week, a new person comes to town. And he asks the greeter, well, what kind of people live here? And the greeter says, well, what kinds of people lived in the town where you came from? And the new person said, oh, they were kind. They were generous. We laughed a lot. We had a good time. And the greeter said, oh, I think you'll find the same kinds of people live here. So this story points to the fact that our level of happiness arises out of what we perceive. If we're looking for people to fail us, they probably will. If we're looking for cooperation and support and see that in others, we'll probably get it. And neuroscience tells us that the human species is on the lookout for danger. Our ancestors were the ones that were always looking for what could go wrong and got out of the way fast enough so they could live long enough to pass on their genes. And that's what we inherited. So as Rick Hansen, who's a friend of ours and a neuroscientist and a psychologist, says, our minds are like Velcro, hold on to the negative, and Teflon for the positive. And so it's really a human condition that we all have the tendency to look for what can go wrong. And if we keep that tendency going, our moods can spiral down, 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 down. But if that's your case and you're saying, oh yeah, that's the kind of person I am, just remember, it's not really your fault. We all have our genetics, we have our culture, we have our early parenting. And if we blame ourselves on top of that, we just become more tense and tight, and it's harder to change. Now, actually, everybody has that possibility of changing, of evolving, of waking up. You wouldn't be here sitting in this room hour after hour, going through the heat and everything else, if you didn't know deep down someplace that you actually have that capacity, that seed of awakening inside of you, that ability to really change, to grow, to awaken, to lighten. Everybody has this. And gratitude is really a beautiful way to help this practice along. So I've been a Dharma practitioner for a long time. I started in 1976, and I've done a lot of practice, but I still have had this tendency to worry and look for what can go wrong, and then I can be a good problem solver because I'm noticing what can go wrong and I try to fix it before it becomes a bigger problem. But it's really not a very happy way to live, frankly. And so even though my supervisors liked it because I was on the lookout for things and could help them and fix them, it just wasn't so fun. ask him. So, I was in a senior student's class, and it was suggested that we have buddies, we have gratitude partners, and we start sometime within a 24-hour period emailing each other about what we were grateful for right then. Right within that 24-hour period. So my friend Bonnie and I said, well, why not give this practice a try? We'll do it. Now, she lives close by, and we've been friends and colleagues, and this practice just made us get closer. And it is a really wonderful practice to do. Since I've talked about this practice, lots of people have started doing it with their sister who lives across the country, or their friend that they went to school with, or somebody that they really want to feel sympathetic joy for, and they want to help each other feel more grateful. So when I first started doing this practice, it was honestly a struggle for me. It was like I would say, okay, Jane, you're not going to bed till you write Bonnie and tell her what you're grateful for. And I would kind of sit there and go, well, what am I grateful for, you know? I was tired, it was late, blah, blah, blah. So, I realized I had come by this kind of habit really very naturally. I grew up in a family where my dad had been in the war, in World War II, and he was the captain of a ship, and it was a submarine chaser. And he didn't have any defense. He couldn't protect himself. But he and a lot of people that were under him, because he was the captain, had to go in and look for the enemy subs, look for the German subs, and find them and locate them, and then tell the destroyer, oh, that's where the sub is, and then get out of there as fast as they could so the destroyer could come in. Well, when you think about it, somebody doing that job for 3 years, always on the lookout for unseen danger, that's not a happy way to live. War generally is not a happy way to live, as you all know that. So I came by this habit naturally. That was the way I learned growing up. But I really didn't want to continue it. It really didn't feed me. It didn't nourish me. And so I started looking. Well, what am I grateful for? You know, what's happening in my life? And actually, I have so many blessings in my life. And I honestly think that even though, however challenging our lives are, we all have so many blessings that it's really easy to overlook them. Because especially if we have that habit of looking for what can go wrong. So as M.J. Ryan says in Attitudes of Gratitude, gratitude is like a flashlight. It lights up what's already there. You don't necessarily have anything more or different, but suddenly you can actually see what is. And because you can see, you no longer take it for granted. So there's many benefits from doing a gratitude practice, and I want to talk to you about some of them. Hopefully to encourage you to use this as a mindfulness practice for yourself. The first benefit is that gratitude really encourages generosity. When you really get all the blessings in your life, it's pretty full and amazing. And then you naturally have a lot to give. So it's a cycle. You really take in, wow, this is great, and you have some to give. It's like breathing in gratitude and breathing out generosity. So that's one thing, and it's been documented. Gratitude really that supports and encourages generosity. Another benefit is that it reduces our human tendency to compare ourselves with others. Has anybody here noticed this week that you're comparing? You're comparing yourself to others this week? Yeah. You know, when I was on a six-week retreat at Insight Meditation Society, and actually James was teaching it, but I had a different teacher there than. But I saw James every day. There's my husband. I'm sitting. So my job, which I loved, I was a veggie chopper. And I was on this team of veggie choppers, and they would bring in this humongous amount of veggies. And I really loved it. And we didn't even look at each other, but unless we had to, but we didn't talk to each other. But over the time, I just felt closer and closer to these people. And at the same time, I thought, Lisa, she's so great. She must be off in the jhanas. She must be having just a fantastic meditation. And, you know, Tanya, wow, she is so strong. And I'd go on and on. I thought they were all having amazing, and I was just breathing in and breathing out, you know, at best. Sometimes I was crying, sometimes I, whatever. You know, but the thing is, that when I talked to them after it was over, all my fantasies weren't really true. They were just what my mind was making up. But I really did get more grateful for what was happening in my life and in my practice and how I changed. And that's really the important thing. It's not trying to be somebody else. It's just being yourself. And in fact, the Dalai Lama has said, if you're going to really evaluate your practice, then check out who you were, what you were doing 5 or 10 years ago. You know? Are you more kind? Are you a little wiser than you were 5 or 10 years ago? Because that's really the real comparison. If you have to do that, are you going in the right direction? So gratitude reduces that. Gratitude also strengthens our relationships. When we express our gratitude to other people, it makes us feel more connected to them. It makes the world a friendlier place. There's a positive psychologist who's well known in the United States. His name is Martin Seligman, and he's written a lot of books, and one of them is called Authentic Happiness. And he's been a professor of psychology and president of the American Psychological Association, and he says of all the practices that he gives his university students to do to see what makes people more the happiest, here's the practice, and I'm going to tell you right now what it is. This is the key. One of them, the practice is writing a letter of gratitude to someone that you're really grateful for. Really write it from your heart. Tell them why you're grateful, and it makes me touching to me. And then go and see them and read it to them and give it to them. So the reason I get touched is because I had this Dharma big brother. We did our first retreat together, actually in 1976, and he snuck out for hamburgers in the middle of it. You know? But he was a great guy. And he ended up actually practicing more and more, and he ended up as the president of the board of directors. James and Don and I were all creating Spirit Rock together. And so you can see, even though he didn't have it easy, he had a tough first retreat, He kept growing. And we knew that he had pancreatic cancer and he was going to die. That's why I get a little touched. But James and I were going to visit him, and we were driving on the freeway, and I said, "Hey, James, remember that exercise by Martin Seligman, the one that said that write a letter of gratitude to someone and read it to them and give it to them? Why don't we do that to Don, for Don?" And so we just pulled off the side of the road. We just, all we had was a tablet. We didn't have any beautiful card or anything like that. We just had this tablet of paper, and we each just sat there and thought about him, why we were really grateful for him being in our lives, and we wrote him a letter. And then when we got to his house, he had a really nice house. You had to, you know, push these codes to be let in. It was a gated community to drive to his house, big house. He had done well in his life, and his sister had flown all the way across the country to be there, and his nephew was the CEO of a very high-tech company. And so here we come with our little pieces of paper, and we want to tell Don why we're grateful to him. And so it was a little embarrassing, like, you know, what are we going to do here with Don? But actually it worked out. His wife took the sister-in-law and the nephew into another room, and we just sat with Don. And we read him our letters of gratitude, and we gave it to him. And it still touches me now, and it was like 10 years ago that this happened. But we gave it to him, and 2 months later, we were at his memorial service, and we were both speakers at it. But I was so glad that I told him while he was alive. You know, and so often we wait till somebody dies to tell them, I'm grateful to you. And there are so many people in our lives that have really helped us and touched us. So I think it's really important to tell them. Because to me, even though I'm crying right now, I might think, you might think I'm a little foolish, but I remember Don. And I remember our connection. You know, and that is really important to me. So, believe me, it definitely strengthens relationships to tell people how you feel about them. Okay. So, the next, pushing on, the next benefit of gratitude is that it brings, you have to be mindful to be truly grateful. You know, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, I live in a great place, oh yeah, blah, 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 you know, oh yeah, I have enough to eat. I mean, it's true, you know, but that doesn't really do it. What really does it is if you are present for it, if you really get it, what are you grateful for right now? And I know, like, I've listened to some people in my interviews, and I've heard how people struggle, and we all struggle on retreats. We all struggle with our thoughts, and our stories, and our bodies. And sometimes we can tell ourselves these stories that just go round and round and round, and there's really no new news there. You know, it's just, you know, well, he said, well, I should have said, well, next time I'm going to say, you know, and it can get just on and on until finally I could just say, you know, anger. You know, this is anger. So that's one key, is that when you can name it, when you can name the story, name it, you tame it. You know, if you can just name it, oh, this is anger. And then when you can feel it in your body, it's sort of like you feel it, you can heal it. And all I mean by that is when you drop out of the head and into the body and feel it. Like for me, like if I'm angry, I clench my jaw. I do that too. Yeah. You know? So for me, when I start feeling that, you know, he's doing whatever he's doing. I'm thinking about 15 years ago. So it's just, then when I realize that, I just stop and I say, okay, Jane, what are you grateful for right now? And I could be in the bathroom and I'd say, wow, I'm actually really grateful for plumbing. I'm really grateful also that I can turn a tap and I can get cold water and I can get hot water. That's a miracle. Most of the people in the world didn't have that option, or many of them don't have it now. So it's a mindful, it's a gratitude, it's a beautiful mindfulness practice, and it's a beautiful way to interrupt a pattern when we're stuck going round and round on a pattern that isn't serving us or a story that's not serving us. It just is what we call a pattern interrupter. It breaks that cycle. So I wanted to lead you through a little guided meditation right now. So just sit quietly in a relaxed posture. If you want to close your eyes, and as you inhale, bring in some good energy. And that when you exhale, let go of anything you don't need right now. Just let it go. Now bring to mind a person or a situation you're grateful to or grateful for. Maybe you'll get an image of that person or situation. And say a silent thank you. Thank you. And let your awareness drop into the experience of gratitude. Take a few moments to just feel the energy in your body right now. And notice any feelings of contentment, or well-being, or joy. And it's okay if those feelings aren't there. Just notice what is there. And now take a deep breath. And bring another person or situation you're grateful to or grateful for. Invite an image of that person or situation. And say a silent thank you. Take a few moments to feel the energy in your body right now. noticing whatever feelings are there. And one more. Bring to mind a person or situation you're grateful to. Invite an image. And say a silent thank you. Thank you. And if you brought one or more people to mind, you might get in touch with an intention to actually tell them that you really appreciate who they are or what they've done. Okay, come on back to the room. Open your eyes. So another reason why gratitude practice is really good is that it helps us cope with stress and trauma. So my friend Bonnie, my gratitude buddy, is about 15 years ago, she was diagnosed with invasive breast cancer. And she had to go through surgery and chemo and radiation, and she's now fully recovered. But you know, as I think most, if not all of us know, that's not really fun at all. And it's kind of scary and traumatic. And in her gratitude email to me, she wrote and said, "Life has become more of a practice than ever. The second round of chemo has been difficult, but I don't add to it. After all these years, my gratitude practice still holds it all. I cry now just feeling this. I'm perhaps more than ever aware of the suffering in the world. I'm now bald. I feel like a turtle out of its shell, vulnerable. I'm grateful for this. I'm learning so much. I'm very grateful for the love I'm able to receive and the love I'm able to give." And I want to read you something else from our friend Don, who wrote to James. James asked, called him when we heard that he had this diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. And he said, "Hey Don, how are you doing?" And Don said, "I'm now in the richest period of my life. Now that I have less time, I'm more open than I've ever been. I'm amazed at how much joy is available just by smelling a pretty flower or seeing a hummingbird or hearing a friend's voice. I don't waste my time complaining. Expressing love and gratitude is the most important thing I can do now." So that's another benefit of gratitude, of helping us when we have that cultivation of gratitude, can really help us when things get tough. Well, another type of, I want to see how I'm doing, okay, and time-wise, I want to talk to you also about another type of gratitude. It's easier to feel gratitude for people and situations, and it's a little more challenging to feel gratitude for who we are. You know, and I know as Finns, you're very humble people. You don't go around saying, look at me, I'm so great. We have plenty of that, especially in our current situation in the United States. But I think it's also really important to appreciate who we are as people, who I am, and for Sari to appreciate who she is, and Anne and James, and all of you, all of us, to really appreciate who we are. We're rarely grateful, really, for ourselves. We are more likely to criticize ourselves and focus on the ways that we don't measure up, that we're not perfect, we're not good enough. We kind of take our good qualities for granted. And often when we receive a compliment, we kind of let it bounce off us. When, oh, yeah. And when we receive negative feedback, we fixate on it. Like I can remember years ago, I mean many years ago, probably about 40 years ago, my work evaluation, it was a long page and it was good stuff and I got a big raise. You know what I remember? The one line about what I needed, definitely needed improvement in. That's what the mind does. It remembers the criticism and lets go of the positive. So the challenge is that to really be able to not just be grateful for all the blessings in our life, but to be grateful for who we are. To really take in who we are. And a lot of this research comes from Kristen Neff and Chris Germer and the program Mindful Self-Compassion. And the challenge is because we don't want to feel separate. We don't want to feel arrogant. And especially if we're on the spiritual path, which we're here for a week, so we're on it one way or another, you know. We think we should be very humble, not better than other people. So I really challenge you as Finns to be able to appreciate yourselves, not just everybody else. That's really important. So I'm going to give you some encouragement. Yesterday I talked about the self-compassion break, and I said there were three things. Mindfulness, and that was, oh, this is suffering, or however you say it. Ouch, this hurts, ugh. You know, that was number one. Number two was common humanity, that all beings suffer. Suffering is part of life. And the third was, let's be kind to ourselves. What do I really need now? So those are the three principles. Mindfulness, common humanity, we all do this, and turning towards ourselves with kindness instead of criticism. And we can use the same three principles in terms of looking at what we appreciate about ourselves. The first one is mindfulness. To be mindful, to be aware of our own good qualities. To be aware when we're doing something good. To really take that in and not just think, eh, that's nothing. Because it is something when we do good for other people. So that's number one. Number two is really a key, and that's common humanity. Just because I'm good, just because I appreciate myself, doesn't make me better than anybody else or worse than anybody else. All people have good qualities. Every one of you in this room has good qualities. And the third is to be kind to ourselves, to express our appreciation to ourselves, from me to me. Oh, this is what I like about me. And common humanity is really the key, because our good qualities are the results of many people's influences and favorable conditions. So we don't have to take it so personally. Self-appreciation is not selfish. It provides that buoyancy, that emotional uplift that helps us be able to give generously to others. Remember, gratitude is breathing in and generosity is breathing out. So I want to lead you through a self-appreciation exercise. And again, just get in a comfortable position and close your eyes. And take a moment or two, take a little time to think about two or three things you appreciate about yourself. Now, the first couple of things that come to mind might be a little superficial, just on the top, but when you really look deeply, deep down, what do you really appreciate about yourself? Maybe you're honest, maybe you're kind, maybe you're reliable, maybe you're courageous. You might be feeling a little uncomfortable because this isn't something you do very often. If you're feeling uncomfortable, just make space for that too. Oh, this is a little uncomfortable to think about what's good about me. And remember, you're not saying that you're always like this. You blow it sometimes, like every other human being. But you have these traits, these tendencies, these habits that are good. They're good qualities about you. And you're not saying that you're better than other people. You're simply acknowledging what's good about you. And now think about the people who helped you to develop these qualities. They may be your parents or your grandparents, your teachers, your mentors, authors of books, people, spiritual teachers that were alive long ago. And as you think of each one, send them some gratitude, some appreciation. So when we honor ourselves, we honor those who nurtured us. Let yourself just experience feeling good about yourself. to read you a poem now. It's called Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when with elation, that means happiness, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. Back, and if that poem meant something to you, fine. If it didn't, let go of it. I want to talk about another benefit of gratitude. There's so many benefits, and they've been researched a lot by science. Gratitude is really a wonderful practice for us. Another benefit is that gratitude helps us find the hidden value in suffering. We spend so much time trying to avoid mistakes, trying to make sure we don't fail. But sometimes we can look back at our lives and realize that some of the greatest challenges in our life had some hidden gifts for us. Perhaps we learned something from the experience, or we grew in a certain way that might have not have happened otherwise. As the Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh said, no mud, no lotus. So, the flowering grows out of the mud. And that happened to me when one time I was, for many years, I taught English as a second language in Berkeley, and there were, it was a really good school, a really big school. There were about 4,000 students that came, and they came from all over the world. And we had, I think, 86 languages taught in our school, so lots of people from all over. Poor people, wealthy people, people who were working at the university and came from another country and wanted to improve their language, and people who had snuck into the United States, gotten past, and wanted a better life for them, for themselves, and especially for their children. So I was teacher, and I chose to teach the beginning levels. And some of my friends really liked the high levels. They could talk so much with people and really enjoy these people that were working at the university. But for me, I felt I was the best service to work with people that were just coming into the United States that didn't have it very easy. It was so confusing. And I can really feel for them because, you know, it is confusing when you go to a country and you don't know the language. You don't know the rules. You don't know how to get from one place to the next. So I had a lot of teaching to do, and I knew that a lot of my students were going to just be there for a short period of time in my class, and then as soon as they became a little bit competent, they might decide that they had to go out and get a job. you know? So the good part was later I would go to restaurants and some former student would come out and say, "Teacher, it's so good to see you. Now I have a job here," you know? But I wanted to learn how to teach more effectively because I was always looking for that because it made me happy to try to teach them in the best way possible. So I decided that I would go to Costa Rica and for 3 weeks, and I would do an immersion program. I would live with a family that didn't speak English, and I would go to a school and I would learn more Spanish. And I had lived in Mexico twice when I was much younger, so I thought, I know Spanish. So I was feeling pretty confident, and I arranged my tickets so at just a certain time when James could be home and with our son Adam, who was just entering high school, so they would be together and I could go off for 3 weeks in Costa Rica. And my fantasy was I was going to be chasing the butterflies through the forest, you know, just having a great time, you know, brushing up on my Spanish and learning this method of teaching. Well, there was one big problem right away. I mean, it happened that I had set up my visit to Costa Rica just at the time. It turned out to be just a week after what we call 9/11, when they bombed the World Trade Center and our country was just in uproar. People were afraid to go on the airplanes, and it was really a tense time. But that was the one time I could go. If I didn't go then, I wouldn't get to go. So I decided, I'm going. And there were very few of us on the plane, believe me. It was me and a couple other people and a lot of security people. And when I got to Houston to change planes, the airport was empty except for all the security people. And I walked through and got, whoa, I don't know what I'm doing here. But I decided to do this. And I got to Costa Rica, and I live with a family that didn't speak any English, because that's what I said I wanted to do. And I was nervous, I was worried, I didn't know what was happening back in the United States. Every once in a while, I'd get myself to an internet cafe, and I'd look, and somebody was plotting to blow up the Golden Gate Bridge, which was near where we live. I didn't know what was happening. I was nervous and anxious and worried and couldn't really talk about it. I mean, the family that I was living with were very nice to me, but they couldn't talk to me in English. And I could just say things like, "I don't like war," you know. It was painful. There was no skipping through the rainforest. It was painful, you know. And I remember being in line, standing in line, and finally I got up to the ATM box because I needed money, and I put in my credit card to get the money. And I didn't put in my credit card because I couldn't figure out how to do it, because it was all in Spanish and it wasn't in the kind of Spanish that I remembered knowing. And there were all these people behind me in line, and it was hot and it was pouring rain, and I thought, you know. And then I thought, I can't make these people wait any longer, so I had to go out and go to the end of the line, get in the line again. I mean, it was not pleasant. But the difference was, I had that credit card, you know. The truth was, if I had to, I could have used that credit card to go home, you know. So I had it a lot better than most of my students, because my students were the kind of, they couldn't use their credit card to go home. They had made the decision to come to the United States, and that was what their lot was. So I didn't get what I thought I wanted. And it was really challenging to me, and scary, and frustrating, and, you know, just to get to school, the directions were, you know, turn, go to the church and turn right and then go to the tree and turn left. And it was like, it was just a challenge to get there and then get home. So, but the truth is, my goal in going was to become a better teacher. So, even though I didn't get the trip I wanted, I thought I was going to learn all these methods and have just a wonderful time, like my friends told me that Costa Rica was such a great place, I did get what I needed. Because after that trip, I really got a deeper sense of what it was like for my students, the ones that were in my class, to be sitting there, not knowing the rules, not knowing where to go, not knowing what would happen. And it made me a much better teacher. And I think when we look at our lives and look back at some of the things that were so difficult and challenging, that we lived through them and we became stronger because of them, or we became kinder, or we became more forgiving, or we became more connected. I'm not saying all of them. There are things in life that happen where people really suffer. And I'm not saying everything has a silver lining, but there are many things that when we look back in our own lives, what was challenging to us at the time actually helped us grow, helped us become bigger. So Dana Falls, a poet, says, "It took me years to realize that the very twists and turns and shadows I labeled problems were really sacred ground, grace disguised as obstacles." I want to also add that you're really never too old to change. And I know that really well from my mother-in-law, James's mother, because James taught her a gratitude practice when she was 89 years old. And she had been, I knew her well, she was my mother-in-law, and she was very bright, very witty, told great jokes, was very generous with us. There were many good things about her. And she also had a habit of worrying and complaining. And so when James was writing his Awakening Joy book, he went to Los Angeles to be with her for a week while his sister went elsewhere. And they were talking about gratitude because he came down with all this research. He was writing his book and he had tons of research of why gratitude is really good for us. It's good for our minds, it's good for our hearts, it's good for our bodies. And he said, "Mom, how about this? Doesn't this sound like a good thing for you to do?" And she said, "Well, yeah, the research all sounds really good, but I'm 89 years old. I've been doing this a long time." So they started playing this game because when she agreed to play, and she was good at playing games. She loved to play Scrabble and beat him and, you know, all sorts of things. Sometimes he would beat her, too.
Mostly the other way.
But, when she would say something like, "This TV, it's so annoying, I could just scream," he would say, "Why don't we try something different?" And she'd say, "I know my life is blessed. I'm really, really blessed, but it's so annoying." And he said, "Well, Mom, let's play a little game. Every time you complain, I'll say, and you say, And I know my life is really very blessed. So they played it a lot because they had a lot of chance to practice. Lots of complaints and lots of practice. And it brought them closer together. They were laughing about it, having a good time. And that's always helpful when you're going to change a habit. And then he came home and would call her up a lot. And then there was another friend down in L.A. And she thought, wow, this is great. I'm going to play it with her too. So she would play it with Selma. And yeah, Selma started playing this. And his sister came home from her trip. And she's kind of more like her mother. And she'd say to James, what did you do to Mom? But I swear that the more she practiced it, the better she got in terms of seeing the glass half full instead of half empty. She kept practicing it, and she has a video out that you can see when you go home if you're interested. It's called Confessions of a Jewish Mother, How My Son Ruined My Life. That's him. Yeah. Because he taught her to be grateful. And when in the very last year of her life, she had she lived to be 94, and she'd had a full life. And the last part of her life, she was in bed, and she had round-the-clock care, but she couldn't get up. She couldn't even go to the bathroom for herself, and she was a very elegant lady. She couldn't watch TV. She couldn't read so much, and she had read all sorts of things. And so, but yet, her gratitude practice had been practiced for about 5 years, and so she had she was really into it. So if you called her and asked her how she was doing, she would complain some, but and she would say, and my life is really blessed. And she would talk about the ways that she felt blessed. And when James asked her before she died if there were any words that she wanted said at her memorial service, she said a bunch of things. And the key thing was, my life has been really blessed. It's such a small word, blessed, but it means everything. So again, it touches me because it's such a radical transformation. We can have some habits that we don't like that we can change, even if we're older, even if we think, oh, I've been practicing these bad habits for so long, I can't change. We can change them. And I was talking to my friend, our friend, a psychiatrist, Seymour Borstein. He's married to Sylvia Borstein, who's also a meditation teacher. And I said, how could she possibly change? When I went to school, we learned that people were kind of set. Who were their parents, who was their culture, what were their genes. They were set, they couldn't change. And he said, oh, Jane, we don't know anything. We have always done our research on college students because they're cheap and they're available. So the thing is, don't get stuck in this belief that you're gonna have the same habits for your entire life. Believe me, if Selma could change, you can change. And I want to read you the poem that she wrote to James when she turned 90. She was, they always wrote each other poems, and she said, 90 is just fine with me. I no longer rant and rave about where the world is heading and my exclusive job to save. I wallow in contentment and know that I am blessed, awakening to the joy of living at its best. I'm happier than I've ever been, and I truly mean each word The thoughts that cause the worries now all seem so absurd. Though my eyesight has been dimmed, I see clearer than before. The glass is not half empty. It's overflowing, to be sure. So the last benefit I want to talk to you about is savoring. And the reason I want to talk to you about that is that you can do this in your walking meditation when you go outside. And that is to really look around and notice what you're grateful for. It could be the way the sun is shining, or it could be the way the lake looks, or it could be the smell of something, or you could be just grateful for the person walking by you, and you don't even have to look at them. You're just grateful for them. So go on this next walking period and look for what speaks to you, what calls you, that really opens your heart and makes you feel happy and more grateful and glad you're alive. And just allow it in and stay with it as long as you really have a feeling there. Feel it and then let that go and move on to something else. You're just walking around looking and being open to what will really fill you up. This is so many beautiful things here. This is an easy place to practice gratitude. And since I'm a teacher by background, I have to give you a little homework. Mm-hmm. And the homework is that if you want to do it, there's a bunch of paper out. Melissa put a bunch of paper, I asked her to, put some paper out and some pens, and I promised her I'd tell you to put the pens and the pencils back, because they're not even ours, they belong to Friendship Inn. So if you decide to do this homework, what I suggest that you do sometime is two pieces. One is write a gratitude letter to someone in your life who's alive that you're grateful to. You know, one of my friends wrote it to her ex-husband, you know, because she's grateful to him. It can be to anybody, but somebody that really you're grateful to. They have done some good things for you. They've been a benefactor in your life. They've helped you, and you're grateful to them, and you want to tell them that. So write a letter to them and tell them why you're grateful for them. What have they done for you? And then if you have the courage, I really recommend, you don't have to do this, but when you get back sometime, actually read them the letter out loud. Read it to them so they can hear it. And maybe they'll say, oh, no. But do it anyway and give it to them. Because maybe it will be hard for them to hear it right away, but it might be one of the most important gifts that you can give them. So that's one homework assignment. And the second homework assignment, if you're willing to do it, is to write a letter to yourself and tell yourself why you're grateful, why you appreciate yourself. What is it that you've done? Or who are you that you feel good about? Maybe you're very kind a lot of the time, not all the time. Or maybe you're very generous. Or maybe you're very honest. Or maybe you're very dedicated. Or maybe all of those things. But really do a little time. This is whenever during the retreat, but do a little time. Take some time for yourself and think, wow, what am I grateful for about someone else, and what am I grateful for about myself? And it's just a suggestion, but if it works for you, I would suggest that you do it. So I want to close with some words from Meister Eckhart. the only prayer you said in your whole life is thank you, that would be enough.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.